Now, obviously, quite a bit of the news being dominated by the visit of President Michael D. Higgins and, of course, the functions that he's carrying out during his visit here in County Donegal. Well, I travelled to Buncrana last evening to have a chat to the President. President Higgins, it's an absolute delight to have you back on Highland Radio here and back in County Donegal. I'm sure you're inundated with requests. Why did you choose to fit this one into your busy schedule?
Well, I get about 150 invitations a week. And I try to, when I leave Dublin, and I do about, I think I have about three events per day in the Oris, but when I go out of the Oris, we try to group the events together. In that way, I can, in fact, spend longer in a particular county like Donegal. I wanted to come to Donegal anyway because the groups I was with today, the Colgan Hall and the O'Doherty Castle, they had written to us before. I was very, very well aware of particularly a 2007 McGlinchey Summer School on the whole background to what's called the Flight of the Earls, or as others would call it, the leaving of the Earls. And then it was an opportunity for me as well to pay tribute to the community groups working in the heritage area. And then, as it happened, it was enabled me also to give the Tip O'Neill Award, to present the Tip O'Neill Award this evening to a very distinguished person who has been associated with here and who has made a distinguished contribution to politics in the United States. The fact that it is a diaspora award is very important to me. Most of my own academic work dealt with migration. I started talking about it when I was coming up to the McGill School, when the McGill School was concentrating that time on Patrick McGill's works as a navvy. I'd been involved in visiting, for example, the sugar workers in England, and I've that's one of my areas, especially. So the migration area is one that's important to me. I had a practice as well when I was a TD of going every December to the Irish centres in London or elsewhere, and that's why we put in a special meeting in Coventry when I returned to visit Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. We had an event in Coventry that concentrated very much on the Irish and Britain. And you have a smaller number now of those, that great wave, 250,000 in 5 years, between 1955 and 60. Now you have the new, younger migrants. So both, if you like, the fact I was able to put a couple of events together, the fact that it was a very distinguished Irish-American, the fact that it was on the theme of migration, it all came together. But in any event, it's been an absolutely beautiful day.
This is a very young award, and the organisers have already expressed their gratitude to you because you will increase its profile. How important do you think it is to embrace the diaspora and have those connections and try and see how it can also benefit the economy, I suppose, because there is that willingness for people who are abroad to feed back, be it through finances or advice, into the country?
Well, for a start, you must excuse me, I have a cold. It's very important to know that this is a very old relationship, let us say, with the United States. The letter from America, and there's Limo Flaherty's famous short story where the man opens the letter and he looks at the dollars first before he reads the letter from his son, and he says, "There's a price of a horse in that." In fact, it's one of the controversial pieces of my own writing in the past on migration, is that maybe the reason we have more letters from the migrants in the United States is that they were sending home money, whereas the migrants in the Australia didn't. We don't have as much letters to work on from the immigrants to Australia. But it is very important. It's very important, I think, as well, for us to move beyond this notion that they are simply there as a source of extra of funding to us. Yes, it is the case that there are very, very definite connections that they have had with our present existence, the existence of the Irish state itself, and the support for matters cultural. It's very interesting that the background to the first president of the United of Ireland, Douglas the Heather. It is to the United States and Canada he goes because he wasn't getting very much support in Trinity, for example, in relation to the promotion of the Irish language. You've had continuous interest in matters of Ireland, and that's important. So that side of it is they are involved in Irish independence. They are involved then as well. Very crucially, Tip O'Neill is that when we have decided to take the political road rather than the physical force road towards resolving matters in Northern Ireland, he's a powerful influence in saying it is into this complex, more difficult political road with all its stones that Irish Americans must now direct both their money and their attention. Then you have the recent economic contraction, which is very much, again, this time, not necessarily from Irish America, but is associated with the amendments to the Glass-Steagall Act and so on, which released pain around the world. But you do have the United States, again, was invoked for assistance there. But I think we have to get beyond all of that and realize that, rather like, you know, the people I meet today, if you take, for example, that O'Doherty Castle, you look at it in 2010, you wonder, when is it going to fall down? Will it make another winter? And they decide that because it's important since the 16th century, that it's very symbolic for all of the Dohertys. Rosa O'Doherty, who is a in Louvain at the same time as John Colgan, and who's associated with giving the name of the four masters. It's just so important to them. And then that's what I wanted to celebrate, is voluntary groups, community groups coming together, taking something like heritage which they share, and making sure that this symbol is there as a stabilized ruin, as it is entitled to be, for future generations to be able to see the history that is behind it. And that's very important. And I think that it's the same thing about the Irish abroad and the diaspora. The diaspora are not just an apple tree we're shaking for apples. They are part of ourselves. In the case of my father, for example, 10 in his family, and his father had 10 in his family, 8 of whom went to Australia. So you have to think about as really scattered Irish people rather than people who may be useful for one way or another. And that's why it's always, I think, very important here in Ireland, is that people may work very hard, as they do in the United States, work very hard, often with 2 or 3 jobs, to even have the security of medical care. And eventually they save up enough to come to Ireland. And the visions that they're carrying in their head of Ireland are very important. And even if they are out of date, are not fully informed by contemporary circumstances, they're terribly important to them. And because they're important to them, they have to be important to us. So we should just, the one word that goes across all the religious beliefs and everything is the word hospitality. And I think that the Irish in America experienced hospitality, and we should exercise it to anyone. We shouldn't regard people here ever coming back like that as tourists, but rather as people who are visiting.
In that, not completely unconnected, during the recent 12th of July celebrations in Rosnaula, there was an invitation, verbally at least at that time, extended to you to join those celebrations into the future. I'm not sure, perhaps you can clarify if that's been formally sent to you. Is that something you'd be open to, President?
Well, the letter has now been received and it's being processed, and I told you the volume we have, and I think that later on in the year we'll be going through all of these and establishing my schedule for the future. But it wouldn't be appropriate for me to give a comment on it now before we have had that examination.
Finally, I know you've mentioned it in previous interviews today, you released a statement passing on your condolences to the wife and family of Ian Paisley. Do you want to briefly relate that to us?
Yes, what I've said in my statement is that I heard with sadness of the passing of Lord Burnside, Ian Paisley, and Sabina and I sent our sympathies to Eileen and their family. And they, we recalled, for example, that they had visited us in, I think it was June 2012. We had a lovely long visit. We had lunch. They visited Áras an Uachtaráin. We looked at a beautiful bowl that they, there are two copies of it from the battle, a tree of the Battle of the Boyne, one of which was given as a present to the Paisleys for their anniversary, the other which is in Áras an Uachtaráin. We had a great chat about books, about the building and so forth. And then again, his last public appearance was one at which I shared with him in City Hall in Belfast. I've said in my statement that he started as a person of very deep convictions. He ploughed a very narrow furrow for a long while, but there, it was such importance and significance that when he did change, that he went down that road with commitment and to the political process, and extended through his visits and through his connections a hand of friendship to those who might previously have been very unimpressed by his political positions. So that is what's, I think, the, in my statement, and it's very, very, very well made. I knew that he had been ill because he had expressed an interest, if he was in Dublin again, staying in Farmley, to come and visit us in the Arse, but his health didn't make that possible. So that's why it is very easy for me to tell you to extend to Ireland and their sons and daughters my sympathy, and to his colleagues in the worlds of politics and religion in Northern Ireland.
President Higgins, thank you so much for your time, and hope you enjoy your stay here in Donegal.
Thank you very much. We all sort of love that.
Okay, that's Kate Bush there, whose popularity's resurging, isn't it? Old fans, of course, great to see her back, releasing music and performing, and new fans, I think, being switched on to her music. Requests now for Stephanie Harper and Convoy. Happy 12th birthday from Mummy, Daddy, Nicole, Danny, Kira, Aoife, Ellie and Amy. For Rory Ruddy in Ballyliffin, happy birthday coming in from Bruno there. Keep your calls, comments and requests coming in. Plenty coming up on the programme between now and 12 o'clock. We'll check in with Pio, hopefully too, at some stage. I think he's in Castle Finn to see what's going on there between 12 and 2. 086-7700-555 is the text line. 074-91-25000. We'll be speaking to retired clairvoyant medium from Strabane, Kate Houston, after this quick break.
Piping hot in Castlederg this Saturday the 13th of September. And that's where the Pio McCann Show will be. Pio and the crew will bring it to you live, talking to world champions from pipe bands this Saturday from 12 till 2. It's the Pio McCann Show live from Castlederg.
At Currys PC World, we've great value on the latest technology, with savings of up to €400 on smart TVs, starting from only €259. Save up to €200 on large kitchen appliances, including an Indesit washing machine only €299. Plus, you'll get €100 cash back on any laptop or MacBook, €699 and over. But hurry, this offer ends soon. You can buy now in-store or order online. Currys PC World. We'll find you the right product at the right price.
Now at Fokker's Blinds and Curtains. Huge discounts of vertical blinds, roller blinds, Venetian blinds, roof blinds and Roman blinds. Fokker's Blinds and Curtains, Dunloe and Letterkenny. 916-8737. Also professional cleaning service for blinds, carpets and upholstery.
It's the amazing Richie Remo and his band at the Fir Trees Hotel Strabane this Saturday night the 13th. Doors open at 9, admission only £8 or €10.
Does your business need a new printer or photocopier? Print Supplies are main agents for Oki printers, scanners and photocopiers in the Northwest. Finance, leasing and fixed rate monthly packages available. We also supply toner cartridges and spare parts for all makes of printers and photocopiers. For a free quotation, call 07497 3633 or email sales@printsupplies.ie.
A little bit fruity, maybe even nuts. At Tesco this week, our fresh crazy prices are the easy way of getting your five a day while saving money too. Like juicy Tesco pineapple and crisp sweetheart cabbage, both just €1 each. Our crunchy Tesco leeks and super sweet sweet corn, now only 39 cents each. Tesco, every little helps.
You're very welcome back to the weekend edition. Thanks to Susan for a nice message. Also says, great to hear a Kate Bush song on the radio. Indeed, it was fantastic, actually. I hadn't heard that one myself for some time. Kate Houston's a retired clairvoyant medium from Strabane and joins us on the programme now. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very good. And it's a pleasure to speak with you. Now, we are going to be speaking to you in the context of some people impersonating you and perhaps being defrauded. And it's a good message to get out there. And we'll come to that, Kate. But I'm going to come at this as a open-minded skeptic, if you don't mind, Kate. Yeah. And I just want to understand a little bit about what a clairvoyant medium is.
The clairvoyant part is the fortune telling, where I would have read... I would have done hand reading, tea leaf reading, tarot card reading, playing card reading and crystal ball reading. And the medium side would be that I would do spiritual readings with those who have passed on.
Now, start with the clairvoyant aspect of it. Do you just solely interpret the likes of the cards, or do you get something that comes to your mind that assists with that interpretation? How does that work?
Yes, it's what I can pick up from the person. A good 60-70% of the time, I don't actually read the card. It's when the person touches the card, I pick up from them. So, you know, I use my intuition with that, and that gives me a better guide to what they need to hear.
There's a great deal of responsibility in what you used to do. I do understand you're retired now. Did you wrestle with your conscience in that regard at all?
Yes. One thing you should never tell anyone, if you see it, is that if they're going to die, you know, that's a golden rule. You don't tell that. And there, people will come to you and ask you, you know, sex with their baby. Some religions, you cannot give that out.
Yeah.
So you have to be so careful, especially with medical terms. You have to be extremely careful as well. And you have to handle people very sensitively.
So say, for instance, then someone's coming to you for some life advice, okay, and you're a woman of experience yourself, and you are getting a reading, and you're reading from them, and you're reading from the cards, but you also perhaps, you know, have your own opinion that, you know, maybe this is basic advice rather than necessarily something that requires knowledge of the future. Did you introduce that aspect to it at all? Or did you fight to not?
I would only give the information that is necessary for them to be, work upon.
Yeah.
So I can't alter anybody's future, you know, at all. Whatever I give them is what I see, and it's up to them what they will do with it whenever they take it home with them.
So let's say, for instance, I beg your pardon, Kate. Let's say, for instance, someone was in a difficult relationship and they'd come to you and they wanted to know, is there any future in this relationship? But it was clear that they were unhappy, and perhaps, you know, we would know that historically it's very hard to get something back, maybe, that isn't working too well. You wouldn't sort of say, you know, your heart wouldn't go out to them and say, well, look, you know, regardless of what the cards are saying, you need to look after yourself. You know what I'm on about by that? Is that, did you sort of,
was there a
crossover between almost like fighting not to be a counsellor and also representing what you believe that you could read from the cards?
Yes. Like a realistic point of view.
Yeah.
With experience and knowledge of relationships, yes. Again, you have to be sensitive, and you can only say so much because you can't really put anything in the person's mind and sway their feelings. You know, because you don't want to for them to come back in a couple of weeks and say, "I listened to what you said and I done it, and now I'm in a mess." You know, and it's your fault. You know, so you have to be very careful how you approach someone.
Yeah, exactly, and perhaps maybe the it's not an industry as such, but the sector, or I don't know what the terminology would be, grouping, but took a hit in terms of credibility, because perhaps obviously each medium or each clairvoyance personality is different in how they approach it, and then sort of, you know, one size fits all then.
Yes.
Now,
I would be very straight, you know, so I would tell people from the start, you know, I don't hold anything back, and if you're sensitive or worried about that, I will, you know, be as sensitive as I can with you. You know, I give them the choice to hear the truth from the beginning. And a lot of them actually want to hear the truth, words and all.
Yeah. And did, what I wanted to ask about, I want to phrase it correctly because I don't want to sound like I'm being too cynical, but would the person have to be a believer for you to be able to read them? Was that besides the point? Could you spot a skeptic a mile off, for instance, or perhaps someone who was trying to in some way catch you out?
Oh yeah, it doesn't matter if you're a skeptic or not. You know, whenever you come for reading, it will always hit them certain points that only they could have known. And sometimes this changes their perception of you completely from being a total skeptic.
Yeah.
Others will go away and they will just, even though they know I shouldn't have known that, as no one else should have known it, only them, they can still go away and still be a non-believer. So I don't try to persuade anyone to believe.
Well, you don't feel you have anything to prove, do you? They've come to you and...
They've made the choice to come to me, and then I do the reading, and then it's whatever view they take, you know, viewpoint they take whenever they leave me.
Now, from the medium side of things, this is where I think it becomes slightly more divisive, because, you know, you're relating messages, I presume, in some instances from people who've passed on and what have you. Explain the medium side to your gift.
Yes, this is connecting with those who have family members who have passed on, and they wish to know, you know, are they happy? Are they settled? You know, are there any messages from them? They sometimes ask, can they give them guidance from the other side if they're doing the right thing in this side? You know, it's a very sensitive issue again. This is a very, very personal situation to get into. It's not, you just don't go down the street and somebody says, oh, I do my spiritual reading. This is something very, very, very in depth and in personal, and very confidential as well.
Of course.
Now,
mostly would people come to you and say, you know, I've lost my grandmother, or I've lost my mother, or would they come to you and say, is there anybody there? What way did it generally happen?
Generally, they would bring a photograph or an item belonging to a person who has passed over.
Yeah.
And the way I work it was I would put the service of photograph, they would sit in front of me, I would put the photograph down and I would say, look, there's nothing I do here to call them under anything like the TV, because we're conditioned the way it is done in the TV. Mm-hmm. I say, what we'll do is we'll just chat about everyday things, the weather, how you getting on, how are you? I said, and if they wish to come in, I will know they're there and I will tell you they're now here and do you wish to go on with the reading.
And describe as best as you can your sensation when you felt someone was coming through.
I suddenly feel a presence beside me and they let me know that it is actually the person in the photograph.
And would they offer some validation? Would that be part of the process or...?
Yes, I would start telling the lady or agenda and say, look, this person is telling me to tell you this, you know, and I will continue with what they tell me, and they will let me know something that, again, that is personal to only them, that I shouldn't know as a complete stranger, you know, and then they feel more comfortable and at ease then, and they believe in it, you know, more, because people do need something to believe in, you know, they need that bit of faith, you know, they need some kind of evidence that it really is their loved one that has passed over.
And how does this sit beside religion, generally speaking? Can they work hand in hand? Is it, you know, one, but religion is one belief system, and then maybe someone coming to you who wants to speak to someone through you, that's a different belief system, or...
It doesn't matter what religion belief you have, that's not taken into account. It doesn't matter what culture you're from. If you're here for spiritual reading, it's to do with the person who wishes for the reading, the person who's passed over, and me, the connector. You know, it's nothing to do with what religion you are.
Do people from the other, if you have this ability to connect people, do people from the other side make approaches? I don't know how the terminology, I know it's a bit crude, but I hope you understand what I'm getting at. Do people from the other side, because you have this ability that you claim to speak to them, do they try and come through and direct you to someone who's living?
Yes, they do.
And how do you filter that?
Well, I'll give you an example. You know, it can happen out of the blue. Like, for example, whenever I lived in England several years ago, I was in an ordinary bus going down to the town in England, and there was a young man getting on the bus and sat in the seat next to me and had this overwhelming presence with me, and they kept telling me to say, tell him he's going to be okay in his job, that he's not going to die in this job. He's terrified of dying.
Mm-hmm.
Before the end of the bus journey, I approached the young man, you know, in a way, you know, I've picked up through a spirit here. I told him what I do, and I explained what I picked up, and he says that was the most reassuring message he could ever got, because he was so worried, he couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep, he was so worried that his life would be in danger in this new job that he was approaching. That actually helped him, and he went away with more faith and more reassurance that it was okay to go and do that.
And that could have gone either way for you, couldn't it, really?
It could have gone either way, yes. I think if it had went the other way, I think I really probably would not have said exactly to him. I might have said something to him, but maybe not exactly.
So you started a conversation. If he's open to it, you can continue it. If not, we'll then move along. You're retired from it now, Kate. I'm not going to go into anything personal. I don't know, though. Was it to do anything with the job or just your own decision?
No, it was my health.
Right.
I suffer from bad anxiety attacks, and it's very hard for me to be face-to-face with anyone anymore.
Right.
And I about 2 years ago, I stopped doing house readings and parties and everything. And then I cut it down to just doing readings over email or text messages, you know, but then I've cut that down as well. So I've retired completely, bar the spiritual work, because I use the spiritual reading and my intuition to use, you know, for missing persons and that.
Is your hope to overcome the anxiety or the panic attacks and perhaps... you know, go back to the face-to-face readings and what have you?
no, I won't go back to the house party reasons. Right. And this is where the problem lies at the moment, because...
Now, just before we go into this, Kate, if you don't mind, because obviously I can't validate, you know, people's names or organisations, but people will know if they're using your name because you're retired. So if you could just protect me a little bit, Kate, and not mention any specific groups or names or organisations, I'd really appreciate that. But what the point is that you are, your name is being used wrongly, isn't it?
Yes, yes. There are people, I don't know who they are, they're setting up Facebook sites with my name on it. Some are Kate Huston, some are Kathy Huston, some are Catherine Huston. I don't have a Facebook site up under my name, so if anybody has asked, you know, sent a friend request from it or tries to be a friend off these sites, they're not mine. And also, I am inundated lately with phone calls from people asking me, Kate, are you not coming today? Everybody's sitting waiting for you. And I go, waiting for what? What do you mean? And this is, we booked you for fortune telling, and everybody's waiting for you. And I've had been inundated with these phone calls. And
someone's making money out of this, aren't they? Sorry, Kate, I presume whoever's doing this is getting money in advance, and people are gathered for a reading from Kate, Kathy, Huston, and then that's when you're getting the calls that you haven't turned up. So people are losing money off this.
Yes, if anyone's paying in advance, they need not to. They should wait until the person actually turns up. And anybody that has been with me over the last 30 years will recognise that it's not me immediately. But anybody new will not know that it's me. You know, they won't be aware. Maybe someone looks like me, you know, can get away with it. But I have definitely retired from house parties over 2 years now. So anybody that gets any information about me doing house parties, it is not me.
Okay. And that's a good advice, Kate. And if there are some calls and requests coming in, people who maybe want to make contact with you, what's your feelings on that? Do you have an email address, or are you taking the email readings and what have you?
I don't mind the email readings. It's more on the spiritual readings that I can do that over email. I don't actually need the person here.
Yeah.
You know, all I need is the first name of the person, and I can do their reading through text and then the phone or through email. I do not mind doing that because that's something I do free, you know, because it's something I would never charge for, you know, don't believe in that. That's something I was given the gift to do. So I'm happy enough with that.
Well, listen, maybe Yvonne will get that off you. And if anyone wants it, we can get the email. And then obviously it's at your discretion whether to continue to engage or not. So really the message is, thanks for the insight, by the way, Kate. But generally the message is, if anyone is using your name, or it's Kate, Kathy, or what was the other variation of
Catherine
Huston, to book house parties or anything, any face-to-face, anything like that, you're not doing it. So don't pay any money over, or don't waste your time going there, because it'll be an impersonator, or you'll lose your cash effectively.
Yes.
Okay, Kate, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Maybe we'll have you back on the programme in the future, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, no problem. Thank you very
much. Superb. Thank you, Kate. That's Kate Huston there, a retired clairvoyant medium from Stravanry, retired because of the panic attacks, which are so severe for people, aren't they, that they alter the direction of your life. But that's a side point, I suppose. 086 77 00 555 is the text line. 086 77 00 555. Maybe we'll get Kate on in a future programme to do a couple of readings for you. 0749125000 is the telephone number. If you wish to stay in contact with us via that. And if you're on Twitter, you can tweet me at Greg Hughes too. Still got no information about the Northern Lights. Did they make an appearance last night? Are they due in the next night or two? We have a couple of listeners very interested in that information. Would you please play Blanket on the Ground for Iris Kerrigan and Convoy? It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, Iris. Have a great day. Love from all the family and friends. If I can track that down and we have the time, maybe I'll stick that on. If not, it'll be on a later programme, hopefully. Congratulations to Olivia and Stephen Lockhart of Glenmaquin on the birth of their baby boy. Congratulations from Caroline and Patrick. And loads of requests coming in this morning for Eddie Breslin in Strabane. A few coming in from Strabane, and also friends and family in South Donegal as well. So we hope you have a fantastic day. Eddie, probably a weekend. Right, 25 minutes to go on the programme. It's the weekend edition with Greg Hughes. We will be speaking to our next guest on the programme about a 48-hour music boot camp. It's an interesting one. Stay tuned. Back in 2 minutes. A texter says, just wondering, did President Higgins start up a new summer school on his visit to Donegal? McGlinchey Summer School, quoting his words, he wasn't very well briefed for his visit to Buncrana, was he, the ask? Well, he was actually, listener, because the McGlinchey Summer School was held to mark the flight of the Earls in 2007, I believe, the 400th anniversary of the flight of the Earls. So indeed, the president was well briefed on that. The McGlinchey Summer School took place in 2007 because I was there. But I don't know if it happened subsequently, but it was definitely a summer school to mark the 400th anniversary of the flight of the Earls. Right, keep your calls, comments and texts coming in. It's great to hear from you this Saturday morning with, for all that's left of it, just 22 minutes. Now, I'm joined on the line by Mark Gordon. Good morning, Mark.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm absolutely fine. How are you?
Very good, and all the better for speaking to you. Now, talk to us about this 48-hour music boot camp. It sounds like a fantastic idea.
So basically, we put this together because obviously in the digital age, all the channels for kind of artistic creation through the distribution have become really kind of accelerated. So what we wanted to try and do by bringing a bunch of artists and music industry people across was to not simulate, but actually present the process of taking a song from the bedroom, I guess, into the public domain. So it's going to be happening over 2 days. We're going to be doing songwriting, video recording, photography shoots, social media, and everything that you would really imagine with kind of an artist, or in this case, two artists, taking a song into the public domain.
Now, I presume, not directly comparing the two, but people spend 6 months of their lives watching The X Factor. You're going to do this in 48 hours, aren't you, from scratch to released a video and a photo shoot as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're using a Scottish folk artist called Rachel Sermani, who's fantastic, and then Northern Irish artist called Ram's Pocket Radio. And yeah, we're basically, the first session will be at about 9:30 in the morning, where we're bringing the songwriter who co-wrote most of the last record for Mika across to do a kind of intensive two-hour songwriting boot camp, and then from there hopefully the song will be finished and it's straight across to the studio at Small Town America Records to cut the track, and then literally as they're putting the last vocal down, we'll be taking them out to the countryside to do the video shoot where they'll be sort of lip syncing along to the song, and on it will go over 2 days, and we're going to sort of make a documentary capturing the process as well. So that's going to be fairly frenetic.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because this has got documentary written all over it. It's going to be brilliant. Do we know what genre? Is it folk? Is it a ballad? Is it a dance song?
I think it's going to be probably a combination between, acoustic guitars and piano, and then the male and female vocals on it. So I think it'll be something, I don't know, I imagine it'll be something, reflective, but pop and rock inflected as well. So they're both extraordinary songwriters, so we're kind of starting from a really high baseline in that sense. So yep. I think it'll be good. I'll be exhausted by the end of it, but it'll be good.
Definitely. And how do the public interact with this, or do they, or have you got your quota, or what's the situation?
So basically we've had a bunch of expressions of interest and people wanting to take part, and various parts of it will be made public, such as the end performance, which will be taking place in the Dome, which is this kind of extraordinary venue in Derry, Londonderry, that Culture Tech are using with the full sort of projections on the wall. So I think people very much able, and hopefully they can come down to the end performance, and then after that we'll certainly be making the documentary as widely available as possible.
Does commercial success form part of this test?
That's a good question. In a way, that'll probably be more of the legacy of the project,
right.
It'll be very hard to gauge that within that really small window, but
yeah,
I guess one thing that I would say, which is a central thing, the music industry, the fulcrum of it is really songwriting. Everything else swings around the idea of extraordinary songwriting. So to have a couple of great artists put something new together, that'll resonate as they kind of continue with their careers.
Great deal of trust involved here, isn't there? Because with the talent that you have turning up, we have to ensure that they don't have this in a back catalogue somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I'm fortunate to have worked with the kind of teams around both artists, and good, safe pair of fans.
Exactly.
At the wheel of this. But it's going to be great, and obviously part of Culture Tech, which is going to be this, you know, whirlwind of activity taking place next week. So really looking forward to just kind of being in the mix with all of that as well.
Culture and technology, it's an interesting marriage.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, out of the creative industries, the music industry has really been the first industry to address the digital landscape. It was music that had to kind of deal with piracy of content, you know, way before film, and then it's music now that has to look at revenue streams in the streaming landscape. So I think, you know, out of the creative industries, I'm obviously biased because I work in music. I think it is the industry that has kind of had to deal with these challenges and is continuing to deal with them.
Mm. And it is funny, like, it's like if film, for instance, drove, certain aspects of film at the very least, drove the success of the likes of the VHS, and there's definitely music drove the digital aspect of it.
Absolutely.
You know, we've a lot to be thankful for there. I suppose too, and I won't hold you very much longer, Mark, but, you know, as you say, when you talk about this small window, I presume it'll be up on the likes of YouTube or distributed via social media.
Yes,
so you'll get a very strong feeling as to how it's being received via those mediums.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And in fact, what we're doing on the Friday morning is a really strong social media masterclass with a couple of professionals working in this area. One of whom's a radio plugger, another who does a lot of work on Facebook and Twitter. And the great thing, again, in the digital age is that you can kind of track through analytics, without boring your listeners, the way in which people kind of respond to it. So where do they click through to find the YouTube page? How long do they stay in the page? Where do they go? Do they go after that to one of the artist's websites? Do they go on something else? I mean, it's kind of fascinating when you look at, you know, when you pull back the curtain and see how people are actually interacting.
It's like a rolling stone that does gather moss. You'll just see it grow before your very eyes, hopefully.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's definitely the intention to, you know, to roll it out in the manner that is most likely to attract as many people. You know, and that comes down to even like what time of day are, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds most likely to be on Twitter or Facebook.
But it could go viral in Australia, or it could go viral in America, and that broadens that all out. Can you give us some Twitter handles or websites that, if we can't get involved directly, that we can sort of track how this...
Yeah, absolutely. So as well as the artist websites, the main portal really to sort of view all of this happening is going to be through the Culture Tech website, which I believe is culturetech.co. So you should be able to... Follow an update. And after that, the two artist websites, Rams Pocket Radio and Rachel Sermani, each of their websites will be hosting the finished track and the finished video.
Superb. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you, Mark. We wish you the best of luck. I can't wait for the documentary and to track how it goes as well.
Many thanks. Many thanks for having me on.
Best of luck. That's Mark in Derry. And P.O., good afternoon. You're in Castle Derg.
Correct, Greg. Today, live in Castle Derrick and County Tyrone, Piping Hot, Piping Festival, a good title for a festival, no doubt about it. It's going to be a fantastic week of coastal weather, such a plus, it's unbelievable here. Featuring pipes and drums from all traditions, and there's going to be a big parade here. The whole community can come and enjoy what they're going to see with a lot of pipe bands here. And we have world champion with the Kilibaki pipe band. They're world champions. And we have Ireland's best Julian pipe player, Patrick McGovern, here. So there's lots of things happening. And also we'll be talking to Eddie Rowley, the showbiz editor with Ireland's largest selling newspaper. That's the Sunday World. We'll be talking to him. They've got a special of the country icons. I heard you talking earlier on there to Kira about country music. Well, there's a special magazine this week called Country Icons with the Sunday World, and that's going in behind the scenes, you know, to tell people and show people. For instance, maybe a lot of people wouldn't know that Nathan Carter is very big interest in fishing and so on, the Gatlick. So it's going to be a magazine. It'll be a nice wee souvenir to have for people that's into country music. So we're looking forward to all that.
It's going to be fantastic, Pio, as always. Thank you so much. Pio McCann there, coming up with you from 12 o'clock. A caller says, would anyone have a recording of the All-Ireland semi-final Donegal versus Dublin on disc or cassette, the live TV game, or can I purchase it anywhere? Have you checked the RTE player, for instance? I know, judging by the text, maybe from Northern Ireland, I don't know what the rights issues is there, but perhaps is that a possibility for
for you. I don't think it's certainly not going to be commercially available for you yet, but I would also suggest maybe a lot of those that stuff ends up on YouTube and what have you, doesn't it? But if you have any insight into that, you can help that listener. They want to see the semi-final between Dublin versus Donegal. Maybe it's the Kerry manager. He's looking to do a bit of research. That's all next week. We're going to have a All-Ireland themed programme, a lot of it anyway, next Saturday between 10 and 12. Of course, we're decamping, many of us, down to Dublin in the build-up to... I'm not, by the way. I'm going to stay here with you in the northwest. That's how much I love you all. But many others heading down... They love you too, of course. But heading down for our forum. That's in On Green On, which is sold out. It's the biggest and the best one out there for you. It's going to be absolutely amazing. A packed house down on Green On. That's Thursday night, I believe, isn't it? This year. And then we're down in Dublin. You'll have heard the promos on Saturday and Sunday. And then both the games. There's two of our teams involved, not just the one. Donegal minors and seniors. Oisín Kelly and the team. They're bringing you absolute live commentary from that. Next Sunday, but the weekend edition will have an All-Ireland feel to it next week. Deirdre Brennan, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. I'm glad to hear that you're going to stay down here in the northwest.
I know where my loyalties are. We can't all go. Someone has to stay and talk to the five people left in the county.
That's right, yeah.
And you've a busy weekend next week.
We have a busy, very, very busy weekend, yes. Well, as part of Culture Night, as you know, Culture Night is next week on the 19th of September. And the whole of Letterkenny has many, many events around the town. And as usual, one of the highlights is our sculpture trail in the town park, where we take over the whole town park. And we present large-scale outdoor illuminated sculptures.
It makes for an amazing spectacle, doesn't it? It's amazing how something can look so different during the day and then when it's illuminated just right at night.
Exactly, yes. Some people, when they see our sculptures in the day, and they kind of say, what is that meant to be or whatever? But then as the night draws in, the magic starts. And it's just really lovely, I have to say. We try and create a kind of a magical night, and it's a night not just for artists and people who are interested in art and sculpture. It's a real family occasion. It's a community occasion.
Now, on Cos and Glass is your direct responsibility in Falkara, isn't it?
Well, the Cos and Glass is a title given to an artist initiative, and there's about 15 artists here in the northwest of Donegal, in the Gaeltacht area. And we're very, very lucky to have such a creative, diverse pool of artists in the area. And we started this 20 years ago. Believe it or not, I can't believe I'm saying that.
I know, it's horrible when you have to do it, isn't it? What fun.
We started it. It was very small when we started. And I suppose we started off initially... We wanted to create workshops for the youth and children in the area, as there wasn't that much art projects happening in 1995 on that scale, you know, sculptural. And I suppose it just kind of grew and grew. And then as we started presenting our work more, we've just been blown away by the amount of people that are that have come. The audience levels have risen to... I think there was probably 3,000 at our last show.
That's a huge number, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And when you think it's just local people as well as tourists. So it's great for tourism as well in the area. It's just a win-win situation for us, because you're working with, as I said, you're working with children or young people, and then we include their work in our show. Which gives them a lovely platform to show their work with professional artists. Mm. And then you're giving the artists, then the local artists, some employment for a couple of weeks. And then the community come out and celebrate it. I mean, it's really just the way it's evolved. We're extremely happy with it.
Here in Donegal, our culture, our arts, our heritage is being celebrated so much lately, and it's fantastic to see it, because we have that which is created, and we also have that which is established. Is that the work of a cohort of people like yourself that have gotten that interest up and running, or has it increased? Has it always been there?
I think there's a pool of creativity in Donegal. I really do believe that. But having said that, Greg, I have to say there's an enormous amount of voluntary work, an enormous amount of push and drive that you have to have, you know, when you're deciding these things in the dead of winter.
And because you're not going to get paid for half of it, I suppose, so you have to have that drive and passion.
Not in a million years, no. So you do have to have that will and that kind of inspiration to just try and roll it out. As I said, the decisions sometimes are made, you know, when it's quite bleak in the county. But I suppose what drives us really is that the audience level, you know, if nobody came out to see the show, Greg, we wouldn't do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's supply and demand. But you see, how can you satisfy a demand if you don't supply it? And that's really where we've made the inroads. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. I have to say, now, I have to give a huge credit to the artists that are here, and they work incredibly hard and they're incredibly creative. And where else would they be able to show their work, and where else would they be able to show showcase their talent, you know? So it's one of those things where we can roll it out, and we have gone abroad as well. We've done international shows as well, so we hope to develop that international sort of showcase of our work as well as Donegal. But we absolutely adore doing it in the Donegal landscape down here in Maharorty. Or we have an added night on Culture Night where we're actually doing a show here in Falkara as well. So we have two shows in the one night.
Go on, you may as well plug the second one or the what's happening in Falkara on the night?
It's the same. We have a show. It's on the 19th, we have Culture Night in the town park. But on the same night down here in Falkara, in Unit 1, in one of the factories where we work, we rent for a couple of weeks, we actually showcase some of our past work.
Oh, right.
And it's going to be lovely because, again, you can walk down and hopefully if the weather holds, we're all right. And it's just a lovely, it's the first time for us to do it in this setting. So we're very excited about that. Okay. And we're hoping that, you know, our community, it's not something that they're used to. They're used to our Lunyer show in Maharorty in July, but this is a new departure for us. So.
Okay, Deirdre, and I mean this most sincerely, keep up the good work. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care. That's Deirdre Brennan there, Director of On Cos and Glass. Okay, that is all we have time for on the programme today. Thank you so much to each and every one of you who listened to the programme and those who text and called in. 086 77 00 555 is the text line for PO coming up with you. And you can email me, Greg Hughes, at any stage you like. GregHughes@HighlandRadio.com. Our thanks to Kelly's Centre and the Mountaintop in Letterkenny, who sponsored our papers today. And also Yvonne McFadden, who produced the programme. For me, Greg Hughes, enjoy the rest of the weekend. It looks like it's going to be nice weather. Stay tuned. Rebecca Logan's on the way with news headlines at 12.